It's showtime, folks. Welcome in, Jason Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Wednesday. He's Big Joe, Bam Bam Dubin. I am Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. What's going on?
What's happening, man? It's a, we're in July, July 2nd, 4th of July is Friday. It's feeling good. No slow 5-hour police chase today. It's all good, man.
Yeah. It is good. It is good. I'm ready for a fun show before I head on vacation and let you guys just have some fun.
Where are we headed to on vacation?
We're going down to the beach.
Down to the beach. Yeah. Good old Rayon City, City Beach.
Yep.
Love it.
Nashville
over there.
Shores.
Went over there one time and saw Mike Organ in a really sexy red, white, and blue Speedo. I'm like, I got to get that. And then that's how we became friends.
Do you remember that scene in The Simpsons of Homer and he's in the backyard in like a kiddie pool in a float with beer and like he's drinking beer and everything? That's my core.
So good for you, man, getting out of here and going to the beach.
Yeah, I need a little break and gonna just unplug and enjoy some time away.
I don't go to the beach in June and July and August because it's just as hot there as it is here.
Yeah, it's hot, but you got water that you can.
So I head north. So okay. I'm going up to Pleasant View and up there.
So you're the opposite of Robbie Stanley, where Robbie will go where it's 107.
I like it. I love hot. I love it. You won't hear me complain about 90, 95 degrees at all because, you know, in December, January, and February, I despise cold weather. I told you, if I win the slightest bit of any money on Powerball, I'm gone. I'm going to Key West. You'll never hear from me again. I'm out of here. So I don't mind the hot weather. But sometimes I like a breeze. I don't mind 85 and a breeze. That's
so
good.
A summer breeze makes you
feel
fine.
Call me the breeze. That's it. Yes.
I was going to say a summer breeze makes you feel fine.
It does. It really does. So it's it feels good. But anyway, good for you, buddy, getting out of town.
Yeah, it should be a good time.
You won't be back here in studio until like July 20.
It'll be 2026 before I get back.
Because we're going to SEC Media Days.
Yep.
Which is the week after your vacation, so yep. We'll be off and gone. And so,
but so I'm doing. I'm taking the whole week off. I'm not going to be gone the whole week. I'm going to have a little staycation part two to get some stuff done. Go to Friday Night SmackDown next week. Looking forward to that, and then down to Atlanta for SEC Media Days.
Nice, good for you. Speaking of SmackDown, have you seen this Jelly Roll The Rock video that's out?
Yeah, and Jelly Roll is already advertised to be at SmackDown.
Oh, is he?
Yep.
And The Rock says, we've been friends for 10 years, which is, and
he what was that?
Gives him, because The Rock, there's a guy that fact checks The Rock.
Yeah.
And like The Rock has lied continuously. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he
continuously
lies all the time.
Yeah, right? And so he talks about 15 years old living in Nashville at a hotel on Murfreesboro Road called the Alamo Hotel. It's gone now. It's where the Burger King is, right across from Channel 2. And he was 15 and he moved in with some man. And it's just the most bizarre, unbelievable story. And then Jelly Roll's like, yeah, man, that's great. And it's like, yeah, what's going on? And it's just like, but he does drop our friend Jeff Jarrett's name, The Rock does, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yesterday was the opening day of NHL free agency. The Predators were relatively quiet after making a trade to acquire defenseman Nicholas Hague from Vegas for Jeremy Lauzon and Colton Sissons and a few other pieces there. They did make one signing, and I know Adam Vingan's happy about this, that they signed defenseman Nick Perbix to a 2-year, $5.5 million contract.
What's his name?
Nick Perbix.
That's like, where are you going to go grocery shopping? I'm going to go to Perbix. Not Publix, but Perbix. What a name.
I like this move. I think they've gotten much bigger on the defense and are going to be able to really do some things on the back end.
Oh, my God. Stop it. Now you're just – now you're getting me and Dr. Crane going right now.
Dr. Crane's just back there nodding his head like, okay, all right.
They got bigger up front and bigger on the back end. Sounds like Skillet, Dr. Crane.
Yeah, picked him up today.
Oh, he's all chopped up and ready to go?
He is. I got both of my coolers in the back of my car ready to go.
Oh, you're excited, aren't you?
I honestly,
you're not even wearing glasses today. You're just
– I'm not. I got nice and dressed up today.
Okay, I like it. You know that he's like, you know, I mean, he's dead now, so I guess there's not really much you can do about it. But
skillet's going on the skillet, baby. Yeah. It's incredible.
So are you planning to cook something this evening?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So Skillet, you're going to do the I'm going to miss the results of the taste test.
No, I will video and send it to the both of you.
Okay. Yeah, but I will not. I don't want to eat Skillet until we all eat together.
That's fine. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have about 80 pounds worth of meat. So
it's a lot of meat.
That is a lot of meat.
Splitting it down the spine with a buddy of mine. So.
Oh, so you and your buddy both got a lot of meat?
Yep.
All right. Sounds like a fun Friday night in Nashville.
Nope. Not at my house.
God bless Good Skillet, times. Though, man.
Good times indeed. But anyway, so then that was really it. And Barry Trott spoke yesterday. He said they've been a little more quiet this year. He said, quote, "We set out with a couple of goals, and I think we really concentrated on fixing our defense now and into the future. We've got some great prospects on the way, but we wanted to get bigger and we wanted to get younger. Then the other thing that we set out to do is allow the opportunity for our young forwards. We got some really good young forwards. It's time for them to play." And he emphasized that it was time for the young guys to play multiple times. And so I think with them, and it wasn't a great free agent market by any means, but with them not really doing much on the front end, you are going to see some of the younger guys get their opportunity this year.
Good for them. I'm glad they took the phone away from Barry so he can make any more deals. I was reading some things from the experts to know he's just getting – Barry should not go on the internet and read about what he's done. He doesn't care. It would not be good for him.
And he shouldn't care.
But, man, he's blasted. But, oh, well, you know what? How you shut everybody up? Do you know how?
You win
games.
Just win, baby.
That simple. You come out of the gate on fire, everybody shuts up. That's all you get here. So now you got to prove yourself. You got everything done. People talk how bad you are. Go out and win games. That's it. Now it's on you. If you don't get it done – then you don't get it done. So now you go out and play when October hits, win hockey games. That simple.
I'm excited because I think you're going to see Joachim Kimmel. I mean, I expect him to be on this team out of training camp. Did you know the Predators had a prospect named Chase McLean?
Do you and John McLean have a son? We don't know about.
Different spelling.
Oh, okay.
Of McLean.
What does he do? What position?
He's a center.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Is he in town for this little rookie camp over there?
I have no idea. Reed Schaefer, somebody you might see. Teddy Stiga, I think, isn't quite there yet, but I know people are excited about him. Matthew Wood, obviously. But they got some young guys that I think that they're going to get an opportunity to come in and contribute.
So Matthew Wood's in town, I saw. He's at the prospect. It's not rookie camp anymore. It's the prospect
development camp.
Development camp. All
AKA, as the cool kids like to call it, dev camp.
Dev camp. I like that. Are we carrying the game? Don't they play a game with each other?
They sure do. We are. Okay. 10:30 on Saturday, we will carry that fine production, the Preds Rookie Showcase.
Who is on the call?
At Ford Ice Center. Either Max Herz or Pete Weber.
Which Ford Ice Center?
Bellevue.
Bellevue. Okay, good. That's always packed. I mean, it's always fun because I worked in TV. There was nothing going on in the summertime, and the Preds had that camp, and everybody was over there, and it was a lot of good times and a lot of good sound bites to do that. So, good. Good for them.
Yeah. So, it's obviously going to be really good to have that. By the way, I was listening on the – I was listening to Robbie and Rex Road, and then I checked something on my phone and it switched over to a YouTube clip, and it was Dale Jr. does this Ask Jr. segment for his podcast, and somebody asked about Days of Thunder 2, that Jerry Bruckheimer had basically said there's going to be a Days of Thunder 2, and Dale started telling a story I had never heard before.
And it is?
And that was Tom Cruise came out to the old DEI, which is the Deerhead Shop, which is actually at Dale Sr.'s house. And, right, you know, he had just done Risky Business to talk to Dale Earnhardt about Days of Thunder and kind of doing research and everything. And that basically the character Rowdy Burns was mirrored after Dale Earnhardt. And that
Which
so
is
much
weird.
So much so that Cruz wanted Dale to kind of be to play the role.
Because in the movie, he's not really – I don't think of him as Dale Earnhardt in the movie.
No, I don't right? either. I see kind of a mix of Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Bodine, Daryl Waltrip. Actually, yeah, Daryl Waltrip.
Yeah, I mean, he ran his mouth, but was not in the same vein as Dale Earnhardt. I don't know, but I loved because everybody's still alive. I mean, Robert Duvall's like 96.
Yep.
Randy Quaid's lost his mind, so put him in the movie, even better.
Yep.
Rowdy Gaines is now
Rowdy Burns.
Rowdy Burns is now the actor that was in Guardians of the Galaxy and Walking Dead. And I forget his name.
Michael Rooker.
Michael Rooker. Yeah. So all these same players are still, except for Fred Dalton Thompson's passed away.
Yeah. The only one that, I mean, Dale was like, you got to have the original cast in it, and then have some younger characters. I mean, look, I don't think Nicole Kidman's going to be in it, for obvious reasons. But
oh yeah, right.
That was, I think that's how they met.
That might have been their first movie, because that was February, March of 1990.
But it was filmed in the late 80s.
Yes, and I'll tell you a story off air about that movie.
Oh, okay, very good. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little racing. Steve Post from the Motor Racing Network is going to join us. NASCAR is in Chicago this weekend on the street course. We'll get his thoughts on that and the season to this point, coming off what I thought was the best race of the year at Atlanta, Echo Park. We'll do that coming up next. Chasing Big Joe on this Wednesday, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Wednesday. Also, Chasing Checkers coming up tonight at 6 o'clock. We'll talk last weekend's race at Echo Park Speedway, a.k.a. Atlanta, and also the street course race coming up this weekend in, on the streets of Chicago. We say hello now to the fine reporter from the Motor Racing Network. Steve Post is on the line with us. Steve, what's up?
Gentlemen, always great to chat, talk a little NASCAR racing. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. I want to go back to last weekend, and I mean, I was glued to the television. I wish I was there watching that race. It's a mile and a half with a super speedway feel. There was a ton of passes, a lot of great racing, a big one, and Chase Elliott ends up getting the win. So sound the siren down at the Dawsonville pool room. That was, I think, the race of the year. What did you think?
It was awesome. It really, truly was. I understand the big ones and crashing are part of NASCAR racing, and I hate to see that, but it is part of it. But what it set up is just an absolutely amazing, compelling battle at the end. And I think part of the reason it was compelling is it was the cast of characters that were left racing. You know, you had Tyler Reddick, who's been a bit of a struggle. He's up there mixing it up. You have Alex Bowman perpetually on the hot seat, although nothing seems to happen, and everyone says he's got a contract through the end of next year. Alex seems to just always be in that conversation. Brad Keselowski has become beloved because of the misfortune that he's had this year, how good he's been so many times, and here he is mixing it up, and then NASCAR's favorite son, the most popular driver, Chase Elliott, and just battling, mixing it up, passing each other, drafting by each other, you know, just phenomenal racing down the stretch. And when we get done our long national nightmare, 44 events, Chase Elliott picks up the win and formally locks himself into the playoffs, although Chase has had a really, really good season, but it is good to see them get one in the win column.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about him and then the other Chase, who won the week before, Chase Briscoe. I feel like those two have been quietly just kind of doing their thing, and now, you know, it obviously took Briscoe some time to get acclimated to Joe Gibbs Racing. I spoke with him in when he was here in Nashville, and he said it was just different. Like, it was a different culture and something that he had to really adapt to. Those two, though, I am paying attention to as we get into the summer months and the playoffs.
I think those are good two to pay attention to. Let's talk a little Chase Briscoe. Where Chase Briscoe came from, Stuart Haas Racing, okay? At one time, Stuart Haas Racing was a team that you could put on par with Joe Gibbs Racing. That was not the case last year. I mean, I love Tony Stewart, Gene Haas. What they did was phenomenal. The bottom line of it is, though, is when you've got crew members sending resumes to other teams all year long because they're all worried about their job, knowing the team is going to shut down, and I think they did a great job by telling people the team is going to shut down. I think everything was done right by Stuart Haas with the situation they had, but that put performance and teams and dynamics and all of the employees in a really, really awkward spot. And so Chase Briscoe went out. He won Darlington in the fall of last year, and so he's performed really, really well. I can't imagine how dynamic a change it is, let alone the culture. The Stuart Haas culture was all about racing. Joe Gibbs' culture is very, very different. It's about championships and sports and everything else. So the culture and then just the laser focus everyone has on the future and not their individual futures, Chase Briscoe's sitting in a really good spot, and he's really getting his footing there. on to Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott has scored the second most points of anybody this season. Only William Byron has scored more points than Chase Elliott. What's wrong with Chase? Oh, my gosh, they're struggling. They're struggling. No, they're performing very, very well. This is not a team like their teammate Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson's going to have more wins and more DNFs than Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott is going to be more consistent. He's got, I believe, 10 top 10 finishes. But when you dig a little deeper in that thing, he has got a number, I think another five or six, that are 10th through 15th. And so Chase Elliott just keeps knocking them out. Well, I know winning is important, but consistency also is important. And Chase Elliott and this team have been really, really good. So I'm with you during this summer stretch. I think Chase Elliott, Chase Briscoe are a couple guys to really keep an eye on, because I think that, and I think now that they both have wins, they're in a spot where it frees them up, where they can maybe be a little bit more aggressive with some strategy and some calls to maybe knock out another win before we go playoff racing.
We're talking to Steve Post from the Motor Racing Network. They will be racing in Chicago on the streets this weekend. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. But the news coming out yesterday, Steve, Daniel Suarez and Trackhouse Racing announcing they have mutually agreed to part ways at the end of the season. We know that his contract was up at the end of the year. What do you think that means for Trackhouse moving forward? Because I know they got Connor Zilich kind of waiting in the wings, but is he truly ready for the Cup Series at this point? Because I think that's going to be a ride that a lot of people are going to pay attention to.
Yeah, that is right now the top seat available in the sport. Okay, so that is the top seat available. Ironically, the top driver available now in the whole silly season pecking order now becomes Daniel Suarez. What is interesting about this one to me is that 1 year ago, Daniel signed a one-year contract extension with Trackhouse. My understanding is that Trackhouse wanted a little bit longer, but Daniel, there's some hesitancy that Daniel has had about what's going on at Trackhouse. And I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's what's going on at Trackhouse. I don't know if it's something outside of it where Daniel is focusing on something else in his life. I don't know if he's got something else in the wings that he wants to do in NASCAR racing. But Daniel signed only a one-year extension last year, and he's expressed concern. This is a weird one to me, because usually when we have teams parting ways mutually, it's the team that has the most concern about this. I sense this is kind of a 50-50 thing. I sense that Daniel has had some concerns, which leads to concerns on the team. And I think the good news is for all of them is we're no longer poking and prodding around asking the questions. So there's the Daniel Suarez portion of it. We'll see where he lands. And I do think Connor Zilich is in the pipeline. Now, the question is he ready? And I don't know if anyone is ever ready. Connor Zilich is a student of this sport. My gosh, the work that he does, the work ethic he has, the time in the simulator, the studying this sport, the nuance of this sport, he is absolutely amazing. You can do all of that stuff. What happens when they start throwing real punches, though? And what happens, you can go and you can run the Daytona 500, but what happens in the third race when you've been bloodied and battered and you got to suit it up and go for another 500 miles? I think that's getting interesting, but I'm not sure anyone is ready for it. But I hear that, you know, my understanding is Zilich is kind of in the wings. We've heard all along that the Trackhouse has four drivers with Zilich in the present three for three seats, so I think it makes a lot of sense, but time will tell where this thing happens. The one thing I've learned about silly season is you just never know when a left or right hand turn by somebody is going to happen, and it upsets the whole apple cart. It's sort of like the playoffs. You never know. You kind of have a sense for it, but one little move can just upset everything. And I believe all the big moves are done, but you just never know what's going to happen here in this sport.
Steve, the NASCAR heads to Chicago this weekend for the downtown race. I'm not a fan of it, and I wanted to ask you, when you talk to NASCAR purists who've loved this sport for 30, 40 years, what do they think about this race in downtown Chicago? Because again, I want to see these guys on a track going fast. I'm just not a fan of it.
NASCAR purists don't like this move to Chicago. I understand that, okay? NASCAR new fans and the folks up in the Windy City love this race in Chicago. And to me, it boils down to a balancing act. And I love where we're at with NASCAR. I kind of love it all, okay? Here's what we've added in NASCAR over the last couple of years. We've added the L.A. Coliseum. We've added the street race in Chicago. We've added Mexico. Oh, the purists are just losing their minds on that. Okay? Now, hold on. We've added Bowman Gray Stadium. We've added North Wilkesboro. And this year we ran Xfinity and trucks in Rockingham. So to me, I think this is a fine line, a balancing act that we have to do. And yes, there are going to be times when you're going to hold your nose and say, man, I don't like that they're going to Chicago. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back in North Wilkesboro, or something's going to happen at Rockingham, or maybe we're going back to Bowman Gray Stadium. You know, we'll always have Martinsville and Darlington coming up. And it's a matter of trying to appeal to a wide range of folks. So yeah, we have the new shiny things like Chicago and Mexico and the Coliseum, but simultaneously, hey, we went back to Nashville. Now we haven't gone to real Nashville yet. We've gone to Nashville Super Speedway. They bring back the fairgrounds. We ever get the key unlocked to the fairgrounds. I think I think that it's a balancing act, and I can't imagine how tough it is. But I really think they're striking a pretty good balance with a lot of this now. When you lay one over top of the other.
All right. So Steve, the Athletic reported June 18th that NASCAR is nearing an agreement to put a street race in San Diego next year. Let me ask you this: because F1 is so popular globally, is this a small way to tap into that? I know it's NASCAR, not F1, different cars, but is this a small way to tap into that world?
I think a little bit. NASCAR has said if the fans, we're going to take this thing to new people and new faces and new places. That was the whole premise of the LA Coliseum, and that first race out there was bonkers. Okay, first race in Chicago. If we wouldn't have had flooding up there in the streets, we'd still be sitting in traffic with it. So, but I think that's the case. But here's where I think we're at with this thing. I think two or three and done is a really good approach to some of these events. No, I don't want two or three done at Martinsville. I want my two races at Martinsville, and if you threw a third one in there, I would love it. The same with Darlington, okay? Because that's the traditionalist in me. But I think taking this thing to new faces and new places kind of energizes the sport in a different direction. I'll lay one on you here that's smaller and subtle. I was on the MRN broadcast of the truck race at Lime Rock Park this past weekend. The place was bonkers. They shattered records as far as attendance. You walked onto the property at 9 o'clock, and there was a buzz in the air. There was people excited about the Truck Series race. The race could have been a little bit better. Yeah, I'll acknowledge that. But I think you've got to taper that old school tradition with a new buzz. And I think San Diego is certainly in the hot conversation with that. And let's get back out to Southern California, where, by the way, there is a rich and storied tradition. Go back to Riverside, even Fontana, mm-hmm. or Ontario Speedway. And it's one of those big check marks you want to have as far as markets go for all the marketing people. Let's do that. Let's see what happens. And I think the San Diego thing is pretty far down the road that we might be seeing that as we go forward.
Steve, Chase and I, my co-host, we have a very good friend who works for the newspaper here in Nashville called The Tennessean. He tells me that their page views on NASCAR are off the chart. I mean, it's like unbelievable. The fans are still there. You know, we can gripe and moan and complain and all that, but they're still there, and it shows how this sport is never going away, and it keeps growing. When you get page views on the internet that are just amazing, it just shows you how popular the sport will. So we complain, Steve, because we care.
Yeah, oh, no doubt about it. We're sports fans. You know, what is sports talk radio and what is news talk radio? We complain because we care. We're screaming and hollering at each other. So that is the beautiful thing about it. And yeah, and here's the thing. We are so trained to look at one of the metrics we always look at is the television ratings. Oh, we live by the television ratings. We die by the television ratings. Well, where does page views factor into this? Where does the guy following along on Instagram follow in with this? Where does the one just watching YouTube clips of it? Where's the one listening to MRN radio? You know, the bottom line of it is that there's so many more ways to consume this sport. And yes, there are a lot of people consuming this sport. I will say this, the numbers from the prime period of the NASCAR covers, the last five races we had before the race in Atlanta, the young male demographic, which is what you guys are looking for rating-wise and what we're all looking for rating-wise, it showed a significant double-digit growth with that racing on Prime. Now, us old-school fans are like, I don't even know how to get it on my TV. okay? But I think that's the beauty. You know, I mean, yeah, I had a buddy of mine went over and hooked his dad up, and his dad's like, I'll never be able to see these races. And his dad pushed this button and pushed that button, and the race showed up on his TV. You know, I mean, so this is this cultural war, cultural battle as much as it is a NASCAR battle. We're just reflecting what's going on in society, but the numbers are good, and the young numbers are good. And Lord knows, we have struggled with young fans, and we're finally starting to make a little progress in it through the prime coverage, and I do think taking this thing to some new places also brings new people into it as well.
It's funny, Steve. People during the prime broadcast were like, you know, how do I watch it? And I go, yeah, you know, I don't know, but you can listen to MRN on 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're here all the time. Absolutely. You know, it was so funny. The prime coverage just cracked me up, because going into it, the doom and gloom, oh my gosh, this is going to be the worst thing ever. I'm not going to be able to see it. My granddad's not going to be able to see it. We're not going to be able to talk racing. When that first show ended, when that first post-race show ended, Prime should do all 38 races. Prime should do this. Prime should do that. Yeah. We should have this on Prime. We should have it here. We are just human beings, and the bottom line of it is, but I'm with you. MRN is there and rock solid all the time. Just throw away the television, tune in the radio, and we'll all be happy.
Real quick, do you think that – you mentioned Rockingham earlier. Do you think that that's a reality, that the Cup Series will be back there? Maybe not next year, but within the next 2 to 3?
No, I don't think it's a reality. I think – I there's something fishy going on at Rockingham, guys. The track's for sale.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, there's all kinds of speculation as to what's going on, but the track's for sale. Now, I think it gets sold. I think Rockingham found a really, really good spot. Okay, we don't want to run the Cup cars on Easter. We just historically don't want to run the Cup cars on Easter. For years and years and years, what Easter was the old Busch Series race at Hickory on Saturday afternoon. That's what we had for years, and that was an iconic race because it was the one race where everyone kind of focused in. TNN had the coverage. Eli Gold's up there making the call, and you would just focus in on the Busch Series race at Hickory, okay? Yeah, we're not racing at Hickory again. To me, I think Rockingham found the perfect niche for the Truck Series and Xfinity doubleheader, put them in the headliner, put them on that Easter weekend. So I think that what they did was really, really good. I don't see a Cup race going there, and it's just one. There's so many Cup races in the Southeast. You know, there's just so many. Where would we take it from? Where would it come from? And then a month after the race is over, and we're all raving about how good it is, the guy says he wants to sell the racetrack. So I don't know what's going on down there, but I don't know that I see Cup racing there anytime soon.
Fair enough, Steve. Thanks so much for the time today. Always enjoy your coverage and the conversation. We'll be listening on Sunday from your coverage from Chicago.
Guys, looking forward to it. I do love going to Chicago. It's going to be a fun time, but it is going to be a blast up there in the Windy City and see how our brackets do. We'll see how the playoff bracket does. We'll see if we get dry weather, all kinds of stuff on the line here at Chicago this weekend. It's going to be fun. Appreciate the time, guys.
Absolutely. Steve Post joining us from the Motor Racing Network, and you can hear MRN's coverage of the Grant Park 125 from Chicago starting at noon on Sunday. One more coming with John McClain, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game here on this Tuesday or Wednesday. Little Jimmy Buffett. There's a bad word coming, but we say hello now to our man John McClain joining us here on the program. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. I can't remember if I told you this last week. After I went to Mobile to see Robert Brazil and the other baseball greats, and the baseball greats from Mobile's 9-foot statues, but Robert was really good friends with Jimmy Buffett.
Oh wow!
They used to fish for hours at a time when Buffett was down there. In fact, when Robert went to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, he sent me a picture of him giving Jimmy a Brazil Hall of Fame Oilers jersey, and how, of course, it just dwarfed him. But I was amazed. He said Jimmy came back down there where he spent a lot of his childhood when he wanted to have a little R&R, and he loved to fish.
Oh, that is a great story. John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits, Wake Up to Wow. So, John, The Pittsburgh Steelers are trying to say wow. Obviously, we know they made the move for Aaron Rodgers, and now they made a trade to get Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith reunited with Arthur Smith. What do you think about the Steelers? Have they changed in your mind, or is it still kind of a, I don't know?
I think it's an I don't know. Because they win 10 games last year and they didn't make the playoffs. And you don't see the Steelers doing what they're doing. And that's because they signed Rodgers. So they're trying to go all in. They play in a very tough division in which Baltimore and Cincinnati will be favored and they'll be third. And then the Browns a distant fourth. All three can make the playoffs, of course. But it's going to be hard for them to be better than last season. And to me, if you're bringing in Ramsey and you get rid of Minkah Fitzpatrick, you're kind of just shuffling one unhappy guy with another unhappy guy. The key is Jonnu Smith, not what he's going to do with the Steelers. What are the Dolphins going to do without him? He had 88 catches last year. Darren Waller coming out of retirement. He hadn't had a good season since 2020, which happens to be the last good season that Deshaun Watson had. So it's hard for guys to sit out and come back and be good. But I think Jonnu Smith being reunited with Arthur Smith was a great deal for Smith and the Steelers, and he'll catch a lot of balls because, you know, they trade, Pickens goes to the Cowboys. They don't have anybody take his place. And Metcalf's going to get doubled a lot. I bet you, John, he may not catch 88 passes, but I bet you he catches at least 75.
Oh, I think that is a good prediction. The other thing, too, John, you just mentioned it. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in the AFC because there's going to be a couple of really good football teams that don't make the playoffs. You mentioned the North, the Ravens, the Bengals, the Browns, and then maybe you throw the Steelers into the mix as well, are all going to be in contention. I think the Bengals are going to be certainly back in it. And then in the West, the Chiefs, obviously, I would pay attention to the Broncos. I would definitely pay attention to the Chargers, and I might even pay attention to the Raiders. It's going to be tough to get a playoff spot in the AFC.
It is, and I think the Raiders are a year away. I mean, they play in such a tough division. And because Super Bowl losers don't do anything, traditionally haven't for decades, other than the Patriots one time when they lost and came back and won it, I'm wondering if this post-Super Bowl losing hangover will affect the Chiefs with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And with all those teams being good, and the best one that didn't make the playoffs last year was Cincinnati, and it wasn't because of their defense, it was because of another slow start. Then they missed the playoffs by one game, and there was no offense better than theirs, no passing game better than theirs, and they're trying to do something to overcome the slow starts, which affects Joe Burrow. It's not like he's throwing four touchdown passes and the defense is giving up five touchdowns. He's gotten off the slow starts too. And I saw at one point, he suggested, do they need to play more in preseason, the starters? So I'm really eager to see what Zach Taylor is going to do philosophically to try to help them avoid another slow start that puts them in a hole.
We're talking with John McClain, presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW. We'll have more with John coming up next here on the Chasing Big Joe Show. We're, of course, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game here on this Wednesday. Continuing our conversation with John McClain. Of course, he is presented by Maple Street Biscuits. Wake up to WOW, Joe.
John, this T.J. Watt stuff, is it going to get resolved? Because, you know, I don't feel sorry for him. I mean, he signed a four-year, $112 million deal in 2021. Miles Garrett, though, resets the market. How's this going in for T.J. Watt? I do not see the Steelers trading him. But then again, in football, you never know.
He's not going to get traded. They will get it worked out. I predict they'll get that one worked out before Cincinnati gets its worked out with Trey Hendrickson. I think both will be done before the season starts. But Cincinnati has a history financial issues with its players, and Pittsburgh does not.
You know, I was reading a thing in the 90s, John. You know, the Bengals were in the same division with the Oilers and all that. And I read somewhere in the 90s, the Bengals had four scouts for like 4 or 5 years. And you wonder why that franchise was so terrible in the 90s. You just look at the front office and realize, how in the hell did they ever win one game? It's just mind-boggling to think that the Cincinnati Bengals only had a certain number of scouts to go out and recruit everybody.
Went to 2 Super Bowls. I remember the Oilers had 4 scouts. I was in the 80s and 90s, and they had to cover a big portion of the country. The Bengals had 4 because the Bengals were notoriously the cheapest team in the league because the Brown family, you know, they didn't own oil companies. They didn't have real estate fortunes. They relied on the team just like the Rooneys did in Pittsburgh. And Mike Brown, who grew up as a personnel guy, he did a big part of the scouting as well, and then so did the head coaches. And it's hard to believe they went to 2 Super Bowls, but they did it because they brought in a lot of great players.
Yeah, John, right now in the league, who has the best front office, do you think, from top to bottom?
Oh, right off the top, Joe, I would think a team that has shown considerable consistency with its coaching staff, its front office, is Baltimore. Baltimore wins a lot of games, gets a lot of first-round picks that are low. They know how to use compensatory picks. They make certain signings with the idea that if that guy's gone, we'll get a compensatory pick. And nobody has done better using the compensatory formula than the Ravens. And John Harbaugh's been there since 2006. Eric DaCosta was waiting in the wings, right-hand man for Ozzie Newsome. That was a seamless transition. So it's hard to beat their front office because of its longevity.
In the same division is the worst front office, located just a little bit north of Baltimore. I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland is just amazing. Some of the bad moves they've made. I saw a chart this week. I couldn't even read it. There were so many quarterbacks on there. I had to get off my cell phone and go to my laptop so I could enhance it to read it. How many quarterbacks they've had since they came back in 99? I believe it's 48. It's by far the most in the NFL. And now they have 5 on their roster. And even though Deshaun Watson won't play, he's in all the meetings. And Dylan Gabriel was talking about how much Watson has helped him, but that's going to be a spit show, as you guys know,
right?
As we all wait to see who's named the starter, when does he get benched. People like Joe Flacco's going to step right in. He was benched last year because he played horribly in Indy, and if he can't play in Indy and he got killed the last time he played in Cleveland by the Texans in the playoffs, I don't think he'll be the starter, and if he is, it won't be for long.
John, with news came out this week that the Haslam Sports Group, owner of the Browns, requested the state help build a new $2.4 billion dome stadium in suburban Cleveland. It sounds like that is going forward. It's just odd to me because that was what made Cleveland special. Cold, you're on the lake. To have a dome stadium up there, I guess now we're in the middle of an arms race, right, with all the NFL?
It looks like it, and those fans were so loyal, but also they didn't sell out every game when they were bad. And I was in there sometime when the weather was so bad, you couldn't see the end of your car when you were driving. And I always felt sorry for the fans who would park downtown and then walk to the stadium to sit in that stadium. At the time, it seated 80,000 to watch them lose. But they watched and had a lot of great players come through those doors throughout their history. But, and it's funny, the city's raising all kind of cane, but where they're relocating to by the airport's only like 10 minutes from downtown. But the fact is, it's not in Cleveland city limits, and that's what the mayor's raising cane about.
Well, and the other thing too, John, is I feel like, you know, when I look at teams like the Titans are getting a new one, the Bills are getting a new one, the Broncos want a new one, the Chiefs want a new one, the Browns looks like they're going to get a new one, the Bengals want a new one. you mentioned Houston. They're either going to renovate or there's something going on there, right? I mean, there's all these teams that want new ones because they know if they build the dome, they're going to get a lot of different events that come with it.
And you get, if you build it, you get a Super Bowl. Nashville will get a Super Bowl. And then they want to get a Final Fours and all that. And because it's such a great city, they get a chance to get those events on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't even mention the NFC. I think the Bears are trying to get a new one. The Commanders are getting a new one. I mean, there's just all these things. I mean, who's next? Baltimore? Like, right. Do they want a new one?
Right now, the AFC North is all outdoors. And it will, yes, it will take something away if they're not. But remember, the reason they want the new stadiums is so the owners can make more money. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, can I be honest, though, like as I get older, I am less and less wanting to go sit out in 20-degree weather to watch football. So, I mean, I kind of get it that it's just like, all right, as cool as it may be, if they build dome stadiums in these colder cities, I kind of understand.
Oh, well, I understand perfectly, and people that complain about it, think about this. People who oppose a stadium that it has to do because, say, taxes, it has to do for whatever. You always see these economists say it doesn't benefit the economy like they claim it does. The bottom line is when it opens, they're at the games like everybody else. How many people do you see complain after a new stadium is built? No, they love it. Once it's done, it's done. And there's some of these, like Philadelphia wants a new one. And they're using the Super Bowls and Final Fours, and some of them are running into opposition, but they usually get done, and they usually attract events. I think Houston's hosted two or three Final Fours in NRG Stadium. It's a huge deal, and as more and more of these cities like Nashville build these indoor stadiums, it will help them attract those events as well.
John, why was a Super Bowl never played in the Astrodome? I know Super Bowl VIII was played at Rice Stadium down there in Houston, but why was a Super Bowl never played in the Astrodome, considered the eighth wonder of the world?
It was too small. You know, the NFL had a rule, 70,000 seats forever. They don't have it anymore. They just jacked up the ticket prices.
Right.
And but back then, you had 70. And the Astrodome was a terrible surface. They would never have played a Super Bowl there with that surface being as bad as it was. Every team that came here filed a complaint before the game complaining about the surface, how bad it was because it was used by the rodeo and so many different people, and the fact it was too small, it never was even mentioned for the Super Bowl.
Unbelievable. But, you know, the good news was that Houston did end up hosting the greatest Super Bowl of all time, Super Bowl 51. The Patriots come back over Atlanta. So it all ended out pretty well for your city, John.
Yeah, we got two at NRG, and I don't think we'll get any more unless we build a new stadium because there's so many other places they like to go in the rotation. But I tell you, once that building is done in Nashville and they start bringing in more events, people are going to go crazy because it's going to be so nice.
Yep, it's going to be fun for sure. John, have a happy and safe 4th. We appreciate it, and we, of course, will talk to you next week.
Chase and Joe, thank you guys very much as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us here on the program, and, of course, he is presented by Maple Street Biscuit Company. Wake up to wow. Coming up next, are you ready?
I got it.
All right. Big Joe, we're going to do a little Dave Letterman with a top 10 list. This should be a lot of fun. We'll do that coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe. Also tonight, tune in is on 94.9 The Fan as the Nashville Sounds take on Memphis. Pregame at 6:20 in the first.
Sitting over there at First Horizon Park. I was down the road from me and Chet Atkins one time. I was sitting on the stream on the front porch. That was a good sense.
That was good. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and the GameNashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure as they take on Memphis.
I also was, so as I used to go those games over Greer Stadium sometime, I would sit in the press box with my friend Richard Sturban from the Oak Ridge Boys. Man, Owls is a good town. All right, we'll see him on that Manning Passing Academy down there. It's the Canes raising Canes.
Jason Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.